It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night on a Wednesday right here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and we're always streaming live, so take us everywhere on the 101.3 ESPN app. We go up until 7 o'clock, another full show, and then we bring you Yankee playoff baseball. 7:30, the coverage starts right here. They're taking on the Cleveland Indians. Game 5, Progressive Field in Cleveland. CC Sabathia against the Cy Young favorite, Corey Kluber. Winner goes on to play Houston, and the losers 2017 is over. So much coming up on the show today. Stefania Bell will join us here in just a matter of minutes. But also, reminder, get the housekeeping out of the way here at the beginning. Tomorrow, we are at Buffalo Wild Wings, South Burlington, Shelburne Road, Thursday Night Football. It's our Labatt tailgate party. We are giving you a chance to come out and be eligible to win Patriot tickets. We're giving you a chance to come out and win money, $1,000, maybe more if you're extra lucky. And it's going to be a great game. So that's going to be the Eagles and the Panthers tomorrow from Buffalo Wild Wings on Shelburne Road. One of my favorite places to go in town, the Labatt tailgate party. So come on, hang out with us. Rich is coming. Arnie's coming. I think even Jason's going to stop by. Heck, Jason's hanging out in the studio here. He's getting all ready. We're all getting ready to go out and play basketball as soon as the show ends. Arnie will have been there for 20 minutes trying to get the head start and get the warm-up shots in. But once 7 o'clock hits, we are out to the Williston Central Schools to I got to put Arnie in his place, frankly. I got to put Arnie in his place. Reminder, get in on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. We are continuing on what we did in the huddle. We're giving you a pair of Nightmare Vermont tickets as Halloween comes up next weekend. Next weekend, Nightmare Vermont tickets. We're giving them away to the best text on the Town Fair Tire text line. Here's what else is coming up on the show today. I am worried about the managerial position of the Boston Red Sox now. I was not in favor of firing John Farrell, but even once you get past that, I don't know that the managerial search ends where it needs to. I don't think that it will. And I know it's early, and I know that feels like a hot take, but I don't think that the Red Sox are going to get what they need out of their next manager. We'll also get into Isaiah Thomas, the comments he made to Lee Jenkins of Sports Illustrated regarding Boston, the Celtics, the organization, Danny Ainge. All that's coming at 6:40. We'll get into batting practice at 6:20. But first, a lot of you saw this announcement on Facebook when we put it out on Monday, and we're super excited for this. Champlain Valley Game Night has landed its first weekly guest. We have really, really bumped up our guest list in the huddle, and now we're moving on. Champlain Valley Game Night, weekly recurring guest, Stefania Bell of ESPN is going to be the first weekly recurring guest for this show. She's a fantasy football expert. She's an NFL insider. She's an injury expert, so she's got all bases covered. She's going to join us every Wednesday at this time, right around 6:05 each week. She will join us. Stefania joined us in the huddle back in August as part of our fantasy football blitz. She joins us now in Champlain Valley Game Night in the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Stefania, thanks for being with us. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm busy these days.
Well,
when we talked in the preseason, it was like we were just waiting for the season. Everything was nice. And now the injuries are actually starting to happen.
Well, when we talk every week, we're going to talk some fantasy football, some injury news. But before that, we have to talk about an interesting story that I heard. So in our afternoon show that you joined earlier, every Thursday we have on Ken Kreitz of RotoWire, one of the founders of RotoWire. And we told him that you were going to be coming on with us in this show. And he said that Stefania used to work at RotoWire. So just kind of tell us real quick about your path in this business.
That is correct. When I was looking to get started, I went to the Fantasy Sports Trade Association meetings, and they were much smaller then than they are now. And I was basically pitching myself as, and what I had to offer and why I thought that the fantasy industry would want to have someone who could present injury information with a little bit more analysis, somebody who played fantasy football but who also had a background that was medical and was familiar with the injuries. And in talking to folks there, it was a hard sell, not because they didn't think the information, they could see that it was valuable, but they weren't really sure how to, you know, translate it into what they were doing currently on their site. And I actually, there was a site called KFFL, and I did a little bit of work for them for one season just to write a teeny tiny column and hope that it would get noticed. And the folks at RotoWire did notice it that year and offered me a chance to come and have a bigger exposure, if you will, where I could write for their magazine. I could do a bigger weekly column that was going to be featured in both football and baseball. And then they ended up partnering with SiriusXM, and that's how I got started on the radio. So my first broadcasting, if you will, was with the RotoWire folks, and I still stay on weekly with them. Now it's, gosh, it must be almost 14 years that we've been together.
Well, a great story and a good fusing of Ken Kreitz, our RotoWire guest on The Huddle, and now Stefania Bell, our ESPN fantasy and injury expert here on Champlain Valley Game Night. Stefania, let's get to the topics at hand. Look, my fantasy team was 4-0 coming into the week here in our station league. The bye week and the injury bug hit me in the worst possible way this week. Let's start with the worst news of the week. The New York Giants lose literally everybody, it seems like, who can catch a pass. So Odell Beckham Jr., was the injury as bad as it looked on television?
Well, I'm sure from his perspective it is, because not only was it extremely painful, which was very obvious if you were watching, but it's costing him the rest of his season. The good news is that he should make a full recovery. He reportedly has already undergone surgery on that left ankle. If you saw the video, and the video was pretty graphic, he had his foot rotated relative to the rest of his lower leg, and then you had the body weight of another football player coming down on top of it. There's really, so it's trapped, and it's trapped in an awkward position, plus the energy, the collision force, is enough to break a bone. I mean, we heard that he had a fractured fibula, but typically with those injuries, you're also tearing ligaments at the ankle as well. There hasn't been any particular detail offered on all that they had to repair, but suffice it to say that I'm sure that it went beyond the fibula itself. You have to allow enough time for everything to heal, and then you've got to begin the process of getting all your range of motion back, your strengthening, and then working your way back to football activity, not to mention just getting confidence in the leg, which is a tough thing for players to get over after they have a traumatic injury like that. So he will need every bit of the time that he's got to get ready for next season, but there's also no reason to think that he can't come back from this. Other NFL players have done so.
So from the fantasy perspective, you lose Odell Beckham Jr. I lost Sterling Shepard for at least the rest of that game. Who's out there on a fantasy waiver wire? Are any of the Giant receivers that they're bringing in now fantasy must-starts, like a Tavares King who they just re-signed?
Well, you know, he had some flash in the preseason, so you might take a look at him. I'm not necessarily sure I would go with the Giants. I mean, look, they're facing the Broncos next week, so I just feel for them. Like, how do you get riled up for that game when you've lost three receivers, two of them, for the season? So I would maybe look elsewhere at some guys who are, depending on the size of your league, not as widely owned. Guys like Jerron Brown, who, you know, can put up some big points, but you got a lot of talent there. In Arizona, you never know who is going to catch the passes. And this week, with John Brown back, he did a little bit more than Jerron Brown. But Jerron Brown's a talented guy, and I would bet he's going to have some points week to week. And then Cooper Kupp, I mean, still available in a fair number of leagues. And he's been an exciting player to watch in Los Angeles. And even though he didn't have a great fantasy production week last week, he was certainly targeted frequently. So those are a couple of names you might want to take a look at. Lower down, you mentioned Tavares King, Roger Lewis, another wide receiver with the New York Giants, Bowling Green grad. In my colleague Field Yates' waiver wire column, which is posting today, he's got him listed as a possibility. So there's a couple names for you. At least, you know, you got to plug the holes where you can, even when there's not a lot of depth.
Stefania Bell of ESPN, she'll join us weekly here at this time on Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Look, the Dolphins offense, rather, is anemic, okay? I have both Jarvis Landry and Devontae Parker. A lot of people took Jay Ajayi very, very high in their drafts. Is it time to move off Dolphin players, bench them, trade them? Because that offense is in the scoring.
Well, it's going to be, I think it's going to be a hard sell in terms of trading. I don't know what exactly is going on with their offense, but Devontae Parker injured his ankle last week. Now, it was reportedly minor, but he left the stadium on crutches. So I think that partially accounts for what happened with Parker, at least this week. Jay Ajayi has been a concern for me since the preseason because he's had knee issues that caused him to fall in the draft. Not because he was currently experiencing problems, but because there were degenerative changes in his knee that were spotted on imaging after an injury that he suffered in college. And there was concern about how well he's holed up to the pounding of the NFL. It wasn't really tested in his first season because he spent half of that season with a foot injury. And the second season, he just didn't do that much. But we saw him last year starting to do quite a bit in terms of these monster games that he had. But it all came in three games, really. We saw those huge productive games, and we saw him not do very much after that. And this year, if you ask me, it's like Adam Gase is trying to figure out how to use him because they see the talent. But if you go back to, I think it was week two, how much he worked, I mean, he was on the field the entire time and carrying the ball, you know, multiple times. And if they lean on him like that, is the knee going to be a problem? So I think the risk, the reward potential is there for Jay Ajayi to have big games, but the risk is there, and he's been on the injury report every week for the last 3 weeks. So Jarvis Landry, I still think, is a possession guy, and if they can get their passing game going, he's the guy who, if you're especially if you're in a PPR league, which is essentially what our ESPN leagues default to now as far as scoring, Jarvis Landry still has the potential to be a volume guy, and he's probably, of the three, I think he would be the most consistent.
So finally, Cam Newton, a guy we had gotten off of maybe as a quarterback one in fantasy, you know, circuits over the first 3 or 4 weeks. Well, now he's putting up elite numbers again. Did it in New England, did it against Detroit. Are you back on, you know, are you a Cam fan again when it comes to fantasy terms?
Well, I was never off him. So just for from fantasy purposes, we had a conversation, and I think we did it on our Fantasy Football Now show on Sunday a couple of weeks ago when it was the Welcome to Dumpsville segment, and everybody was like, dump, 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 get rid of him. And I said, no, I think he was going to have a big game against the Patriots. I thought the health concerns around him were a bit overplayed, people saying, well, his shoulder's not right, or he's still recovering, or he's not the same. And I felt like we saw enough in the practice sessions and what he did in the preseason, even the very tiny bit he played in that one game in the preseason, that I wasn't worried about the health of it per se. But if you're talking about building up endurance, getting back to four quarters of football, not to mention they wanted to change things for him. Fewer designed runs, try and get him to release the football more quickly. So the offense was changing a little bit. I felt like it was going to take a while for him to adjust to that and to build back his football conditioning, but then after a few weeks we would start to see it, and I think he did. So after the Patriots game, everyone said, well, that was just one game against a bad defense. Let's see how he does when he goes into Detroit. And I think he answered that question. So I think the confidence is back after he puts together a couple of games like that. We've seen him using multiple receivers. Obviously, Devin Funchess has gone up in value as a wide receiver because of his increased utilization. And I think that, yes, for the most part, I think Cam is back.
Stefan, I'll get you out of here on two more questions, one injury-related, one fantasy-related. You mentioned Cam Newton's injured shoulder, and now we have Andrew Luck's injured shoulder still. Now, I was a college baseball pitcher, so I'm very, very in tune with shoulder issues and shoulder soreness and shoulder problems, but I felt like I don't hear that a lot about quarterbacks. Why is that? Like, why is the shoulder not injured as much in a quarterback as it is in a pitcher?
It's a great question. We talk about that sort of in the medical circles. One of the thoughts is the velocity. They're probably not throwing as many times as violently as a baseball pitcher does, and the mechanics of that pitcher are versus a toss from a quarterback are different. You know, if you look at a quarterback's throw, the way they're stepping in, there's so much more of a full body movement through the they're really stepping forward on a level ground. A pitcher is throwing downhill very violently with really that ball releases off the fingertips. So the way it changes the mechanics all the way up the chain are fairly dramatic. And, certainly if you did an in-depth biomechanical analysis, you could sort of look at how the different joints are stressed with the two kinds of pitches. But still, a lot of the quarterbacks in the NFL were baseball pitchers at one point, so they've undergone a lot of throwing. And the wear and tear injuries are there. They're just not there to the same extreme, and they can also compensate around them differently than baseball pitchers, where there's so much finesse and so much specificity to their throw. You know, Tom Brady's had a shoulder issue practically since he's been in the league. You may remember the years where he was on the injury report essentially weekly till they've modified the injury report. You don't see that anymore, but he's had stuff, if you will, with his throwing shoulder for years, and I don't think anyone would argue with the fact that Tom Brady has been able to be effective despite all of that. So what you rarely see are situations like Andrew Luck where it's a torn labrum to the degree that it requires surgery. And even he threw for a year and a half and threw for over 4,000 yards last year, mind you, with a quote-unquote bad shoulder, something you wouldn't probably really see in baseball, and at least not to the same degree. I mean, they're always pitching with, again, stuff in her shoulder, the result of wear and tear, but getting to the point where it's bad enough that you're going to need surgery after the season, you don't usually see them throwing at a high level right up until they do it. And I think there are just differences in terms of the way that you throw football versus baseball that allow that to happen.
So finally, I'll get you out of here on this. Something I was fascinated in, you know, I was listening to a lot of gambling shows. I feel like people are gambling or fantasy, or some of them are both, but a couple years ago I was listening to gambling info, and there was trends. You know, this team, you know, teams are 0-10 after going up against the Seahawks defense. Teams are 0-8 after going up against this physical defense. Is there anything like that in fantasy where you look at it and say, okay, this guy is, you know, this team is coming off playing, you know, Seattle's defense, and they're very physical, so we're going to stay away from all of that team this week? Are there any fantasy trends like that?
Oh, wow. I haven't heard of that particular one. I'm actually kind of interested in that. You know, it, like they got so beat up. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Like they got so beat up playing this team that I don't even want to touch them this week. I think the only place that we really see it and look at it consistently is the Thursday night game.
Right.
And, you know, the NFL puts out injury reports at the end of the year looking at data from, you know, how many ACL injuries happened across the season and where did they occur, which weeks. And it's, you know, when we're in a season, we feel like we're seeing the worst season ever because of injury. But when you look at the data at the end of the year, the numbers really haven't changed. They've been fairly flat for the last few years. And one of the things the NFL looks at are injuries in Thursday night games compared to Sunday night games, because we just always feel like the Thursday night game, well, that's riskier, they're more fatigued, guys get hurt, but the numbers don't bear that out. What I think we do see is the quality of the game is less, and the productivity for some players might be less, and I certainly think there's something to the fact that the players don't like playing on Thursday night, so mentally, they go into that game differently. They don't feel like they're as rested. They don't like playing on Thursday night. How that influences from one guy to the next, I can't really say. But we feel like we see sloppier football. I don't know how that translates to fantasy, but that's the one area I've seen it where Thursday night games seem to have a big impact on, do I want to play a guy on Thursday after I just saw him on Sunday?
15 minutes, we all just got smarter, and we're going to get to do it every single week now. Stefania Bell, our ESPN Fantasy Football Insider, our ESPN Injury Expert, she's going to join us right here at this time every Wednesday for the rest of the NFL regular season. Stefania, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks for having me.
And there she goes, Stefania Bell, our ESPN NFL Insider. Can't wait to talk to her every week. Just such perspective there. The OBJ injury, I was gruesome when I saw it. It was gruesome when I attempted to watch the replay. It was gruesome to hear her talk about it, to describe his foot, his ankle rotating. Like, you can miss me with the rest of the analysis on that one, but we're super pumped to have Stefania Bell join us every single week. Look, I'm way over the time in the first segment. Jason, who's not even producing the show right now, is screaming at me in the corner, don't you have to go to break? Don't you have to go to break? Yes, I have to go to break. When we come back, the best sound bites in sports get you ready for Yankees-Cleveland Game 5. Who's saying what and what's going on? Batting practice next on 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All All right, everybody, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here, 101.3 ESPN. Brady Farkas in the house going up until 7 o'clock. It's Yankees and the Indians, Game 5 of the American League Division Series. Loser goes home, winner goes on to face Houston, who vanquished the Red Sox. Speaking of the Red Sox, we'll get you my take on the Red Sox managerial situation, how I don't think this is going to end up the way that it needs to end up. We'll do that in about 15 minutes. But first, the best sound bites in sports. Who's saying what and what's going on? Batting practice now.
Champlain Valley Game Night Batting Practice.
Speaking of the Yankees and Indians, speaking of Game 5, let's go right to the source and hear from the participants in that one. Joe Girardi was asked a question, manager of the Yankees, asked about really how much has he just kind of let everything in this series, the distractions around his future, how much has he let that seep into his stream of consciousness, even in his off time?
You know, I tried to relax, and I watched it, a movie, you know, on the flight, and you know, and you know, I think that probably that when I get a chance to turn my mind off, I try to, because I've reflected a lot probably in the last 6 or 7 days. So when I do get a chance, I turn it off.
The more I hear from Joe Girardi, the more I talk to, the more we talk to Buster Olney, the more I hear from Tim Kirchen of ESPN, the less I think Joe Girardi's coming back. I just think that this job is no longer really a good fit for him. And you can kind of hear it in his voice. He talks about turning his mind off. He gets emotional. He's being booed by the home crowd. If he wins the World Series, it's expected. He's already won one. Yes, maybe his long-term legacy is cemented as a place in the game, but as far as his place with the Yankee fans, I don't know that even, you know, if you win, congratulations, it's expected. If you lose, then you're the guy who's failing to restore the Yankee way. And I think that's weighed on him, in addition to all the extracurricular stuff that I've talked about that he's had to deal with and that he's really overcome. And I think it's a shame to see a good, who appears to be a good guy and a good baseball guy, just beaten down by this job, by this fan base, and by this city. It just does not seem, you know, fair is not something that usually exists in sports. Things are wholly unfair in sports. But Joe Girardi seems like he's been treated unfairly. Moving on, his starting pitcher for today, CC Sabathia, talked about what it was like, what it is like to get the call in a situation like this.
It's a hell of a lot fun to be in it than to be sitting on the side. So I'm just glad I get the opportunity to participate and not have to watch, because, you know, watching these games, I get an ulcer. But pitching in them is a lot more fun.
And not every major leaguer feels that way. Everybody wants to be the guy, but nobody wants to put themselves. Not everybody wants to put themselves out there in the situation to make that distinction be yours, right? Like, people say, yeah, I want the ball in Game 7, but do you really want the ball in Game 7? Yeah, I want the ball in my hands at the end of the game. Do you really want the ball in your hands at the end of the game? I can tell you firsthand that I would tell you I wanted to be the best and I wanted to be our number one pitcher in college and I wanted the ball in this situation against that team. But when push comes to shove, sometimes it's easier to just be the guy who knows you don't have any pressure on you. It doesn't live and die with you. It doesn't fall on your shoulders when things go poorly. And if you can't handle that aspect, then you don't deserve the credit when things go well. The truly special ones, and CC Sabathia's attitude is special. Maybe he'll go out today and throw 9 innings and throw a no-hitter. Maybe he'll go out today and not get out of the first inning. I don't know, but his attitude is in the right place, and that's the kind of attitude that I want on the mound. And that's not the kind of attitude that every pitcher has. And we asked Buster Olney yesterday, why not Sonny Gray in this game? And the reason was, he said, Yankee people think that Sonny Gray throws defensive. And basically, translation, Sonny Gray throws scared. Sonny Gray is afraid to get hit. He tries to be too fine. He tries to rely on his curveball. He doesn't go to his fastball enough. He's afraid of getting hit in these big situations. That's how a lot of people feel, and that's how a lot of people pitch, and you're not going to get that from CC Sabathia today. He's going to have the right attitude. He's not going to be intimidated. I don't know what the result will be, but I know that he's prepared to go into this start mentally and physically as good as he can be at the age of 37. CC Sabathia also talked about what it's like to pitch in Cleveland, the place that he called home for quite a bit of the early part of his career.
Like I said before, you know, I played here, you know, parts of almost 8 years. So, you know, very familiar with the city, a lot of the fans, you know, a lot of who I am as an adult, you know, as a male, as an adult man, you know, Cleveland kind of shaped that. You know, three of my kids were born here.
And you love these stories, right? Guy started his career in Cleveland. Can he go back full circle? And maybe this is not the last year of his career, but can he go out here and write one of the final chapters of his career in the same place where he wrote all the early chapters of his career? I'm rooting for CeCe Sabathia. CeCe Sabathia has been at the root of a lot of punchline jokes about weight. He's battled his alcohol demons. He's been a guy who performed up to the standards of his big contract, and he's been a guy who over the last few years has massively underperformed in what his contract dictates that it should. He's battled poor health in terms of his weight. He's battled poor health in terms of his knee, in terms of his shoulder. He's battled poor performance. He's adapted himself from 95 miles an hour to 87 miles an hour, and he's done it pretty gracefully. I'm rooting for CeCe Sabathia tonight. I'm no Yankee fan. I'd like to see Cleveland win because I think Cleveland and Houston is a better series than the Yankees in Houston. But I'm rooting for CeCe Sabathia to come out and show well today because, once again, if he does, it would be an example that you don't need 98 to be successful on the mound. You can be successful with 88 if you have guts, guile, location, movement, and toughness. I'm rooting for CeCe Sabathia in that. Let's move over to the NFL, and I tell you what, quietly, a lot of things are going wrong in Pittsburgh. Ben Roethlisberger's throwing 5 interceptions and saying that he might be done. Ben Roethlisberger has battled injury over the last few years. There's dissension over the anthem protest and Alejandro Villanueva and all that. You've got Antonio Brown complaining on the sideline. You've got Le'Veon Bell saying that he didn't get the ball enough and basically saying what he thinks the formula for winning is.
I mean, I think that's just the formula for winning. The Jaguars, they ran the ball a lot of times. You know, running the ball kind of, you know, shortens the game. It makes, you know, it kind of opens up the offense. You know, it makes passing the ball easier. You know, it gets you in third and manageable downs. You know, it just kind of, you know, it just happens. You know, so I think just over the course of the season, you'll see the teams that run the ball heavy. You know, the teams that kind of win games.
Le'Veon Bell saying that running the ball is the formula, and then here's a nice drop. It's only about a second long, so here's why Le'Veon Bell says the Steelers didn't beat Jacksonville.
I don't think we got enough attempts.
Didn't get enough attempts. Did not get enough attempts. You know what? I agree to a degree with Le'Veon Bell's sentiments. It's inappropriate to call out your coaching staff and call it to play calling publicly in the media, especially for a guy who wasn't part of the meetings preseason because he was holding out. He wasn't there, so I don't believe he has the right to go and do that publicly. That said, I don't know that running the ball is the formula, but offensive balance is the formula. And when you're down big, you're going to have to throw the ball. Now, maybe you're not down big early if you are running the ball, but there just has to be some balance to an offense. It's the same thing I've said about the Patriots for a few weeks now. You're going to keep your quarterback healthy. It opens up the pass game, as he said. I'm not saying he's wrong, but the way he went about it is wrong. It's batting practice, Champlain Valley game night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Josh Gordon, there's a name a lot of you have heard, but you're trying to remember where you heard it. Well, at one point, Josh Gordon played for the Cleveland Browns, and he was maybe the most productive receiver in the National Football League. And Josh Gordon's been suspended multiple times and now is out of football for his repeated drug use over the course of his life and his time in the NFL. Well, he started to open up about that, and it's pretty amazing stuff here.
I've been enabled most of my life, honestly. I mean, I've been enabled by coaches, teachers, professors, you know, everybody pretty much gave me a second chance kind of just because of my ability.
And Josh Gordon not getting that second chance right now. Maybe he will be reinstated to the NFL, but he hasn't even applied for it yet as far as I know, and he's been a guy who's been out for a long time. He's still only 26, 27 years old. It's not there's not talent there, but there's a story in here. But we said at Baylor, coaches helped him cover up his drug use. So you talk about the sins of Baylor University, it gets worse and worse. And Josh Gordon went on, this is kind of like a mini documentary series, but whatever it is, he's finally starting to open up about his past. And He opened up a little more here about just the kind of drug use he's had over the course of his life.
I've used alcohol many, many occasions. Xanax, many occasions. Cocaine, several occasions. Marijuana, most of my life. Codeine, cough syrup, promethazine, very prevalent from where I'm from. You know, it's what I grew up using.
I mean, that's a laundry list of substances, and the music's over. Batting practice continues. We got one more clip here. But on Josh Gordon, I said the same thing about Johnny Manziel, said the same thing about other athletes who are afflicted with addiction problems. I just hope he gets better. It'd be nice to see Josh Gordon come back and play in the NFL and play well and contribute to a team. But more so than anything, I hope he just turns his life around. And a lot of people don't like that maybe he's doing this in a documentary format. But you know what? Whatever gets him talking about it, because him not talking about it has contributed to that, to those feelings of being bigger than the system, being bigger than the NFL, those feelings of being enabled. Maybe talking about it is a good first step. Last thing, Bruce Arena, the head coach of the U.S. men's national soccer team, which won't be playing in the World Cup after an embarrassing loss to Trinidad and Tobago yesterday.
Our forwards were not able to hold the ball. They did a poor job there. We didn't get Pulisic into the game. We played poorly. The first goal was unfortunate. Those things happen.
Look, I'm not into soccer like a lot of people in this country are starting to. Here's what I can tell you. This is a bad loss for U.S. soccer. This is a really bad loss for U.S. soccer. I mean, this is the first time since 1986 the U.S. men won't be playing in the World Cup. Okay, you lose 2-1 to Trinidad and Tobago. Oh, the U.S. entered Tuesday with a 93% chance to make the World Cup. Going back to when the World Cup draws were done, you know, the pairings were given to even get to the World Cup, it was a 97% chance. It's an embarrassing loss. Champlain Valley game night here. The last time the World Cup without the U.S., well, the last time the World Cup was played without the U.S., Soviet Union and West Germany were competing. That's how long it's been. Champlain Valley game night here on 101.3 ESPN at 101.3ESPN.com. When we come back, I really don't know that the Red Sox are going to get the manager they need. It's another reason why maybe firing John Farrell was a mistake. All that and more next on 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley game night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Final segment, Champlain Valley game night on a Wednesday. We go up until 7 o'clock right here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and the 101.3 ESPN app. 7:30, American League Division Series Game 5, Yankees and Cleveland get underway with the pregame coverage. So Yankees looking to advance to take on Houston. Houston, the team that just knocked out the Red Sox and ended their season. And I've been teasing this all show, and I did a lot of thinking about this all day long. The Boston Red Sox fired John Farrell. I didn't think that was the right move based on productivity. Five seasons, three, you know, back-to-back division championships, back-to-back 93-win seasons, overcame a lot of obstacles, won a World Series in his first year. Productivity-wise, it wasn't the right move. But nonetheless, there's nothing we can do about that. John Farrell's gone. I don't think the Red Sox are going to get the kind of manager they need now. A lot of people didn't like John Farrell and the way he handled a bullpen, didn't like his in-game management, didn't like this and didn't like that. What I think the Red Sox need is a fresh, young voice. A fresh, young voice that's a little bit more sabermetrically inclined. I'm not saying it needs to be a nerdy guy with a pocket protector out there running charts before every pitch and every at-bat. Not that. But I think they need a guy who's a little bit more new school. John Farrell was old school. John Farrell went on his gut, and that's part of the reason why, even though he was ejected, he left Chris Sale in the eighth inning when he probably shouldn't have. I think you need a guy who goes a little bit more on sabermetrics and a little bit less on gut, but also still is a good people person, is a good effective communicator. The Red Sox aren't going to get that guy. Here's what the Red Sox need. Here's what the Red Sox are going to get, rather. They need what I said. Young, energetic, fresh voice can interject some life and personality into this team, and a guy who is up to date on new age ways of thinking in baseball. They can't get that. They're not going to get that. Why? This team is not built to respond to a coach like that, to a manager like that. I want to see them embrace new wave baseball, but they can't. They can't go out and sign guys that fit into that guy's mold. They are so far up against the luxury tax that they can't really do anything huge this offseason. They can't do anything massive this offseason to go get some of those guys, to go get a collection of those guys. If they're going to blow over the luxury tax, they're going to go sign Eric Hosmer or something, and that's a guy who, to me, is not a fit for that kind of baseball. That's an old-school way of baseball thinking, and Dave Dombrowski is an old-school way of baseball guy also. He doesn't value his prospects that much. He doesn't value massively the speed game. He doesn't value massively the defensive game. He wants offense. He wants power. He wants home runs. And if they're going to blow through the luxury tax, they're going to go sign one of those guys, not some guys who fit the new way of style and the new way and style of thinking. Again, I want them to bring a manager that brings some life to the ballpark, that has some personality, that makes it fun for these guys to be here. The Red Sox won't embrace that. This team does not have fun. We talked all year about them not being likable. This team doesn't have fun. Do you think Chris Sale is going to want some, 44-year-old sabermetric guy out there blaring music in batting practice and coming up with goofy things and this, dress-up day and all that? I don't see it. Do you think David Price is? Do you think Dustin Pedroia is? Do you think that these veterans on this team that run this clubhouse are going to embrace that? I don't. Maybe Mookie Betts and Andrew Benintendi would, but those guys are going to be outnumbered. The Wind Dance Repeat crew is going to be outnumbered by the stodgy veterans who just want to win and just want to play the game, quote, the right way and hard-nosed and the old-school way. This Red Sox team would not embrace a fun-loving, new-wave manager. Okay, so they're going to get another old, stodgy baseball guy. In my mind, an old, stodgy baseball guy, and they'll be stuck with what they've been stuck with. John Farrell might not be his name, but John Farrell could very easily be his way of thinking. Do you want Jim Leland running this team? Do you want Tony La Russa running this team? I don't, but those are the kind of people that check the boxes of what the Red Sox have. They have veterans who will require that this guy have prior managing experience at a higher level than Farrell, so that's going to be multiple championship appearances and hopefully multiple championship wins. They're going to want a guy who just put your feet on the ground and get the job done and punch in and punch out. That's what they've had. Old school way of thinking, and that's where I see them going again. Alex Cora might be the best name on the board, but I don't know that the Red Sox will embrace a guy like Alex Cora. Yeah, he's been around the game, but he's been a broadcaster, and is that good enough for the Dustin Pedroia and David Prices of the world? I don't know. I wanted a new way. If you're going to change the regime, then change the regime. Go with a different way of thinking, different voice, effective communicator, runs the ship, a little bit more freely, allows these guys, talks about sabermetrics and stats and defensive positioning and all this stuff. I don't think this team will buy into that. And so as a result, they're going to end up with exactly what they've had in John Farrell. That guy will just have a different name. That's my biggest fear. I hope I'm wrong. It's Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. A powerful story in Sports Illustrated today by Lee Jenkins. And Isaiah Thomas says he'll always love the city of Boston. He'll always love Brad Stevens, and he'll always love the players. He says he may never speak to Danny Ainge again. He goes, that might not happen. I'll talk to everybody else. But what he did, knowing everything I went through, you don't do that, bro. That's not right. I'm not saying F you, but every team in this situation comes out a year or two later and says, we made a mistake, and that's what they'll say too. You can't not root for Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas might not be better than Kyrie Irving, but he is 10 times more likable and 10 times more rootable than Kyrie Irving. Isaiah Thomas, just look at the difference between the two. Isaiah Thomas is selfless, okay? He played hours after his sister's death. He cost himself money and his spot on the roster in Boston by injuring that hip playing for Danny Ainge, playing for you, the fans, and playing for those teammates. He's selfless. Kyrie Irving got himself out of Cleveland because a situation where he'd been to three consecutive finals wasn't good enough for him. So you've got selfless versus selfish. The dichotomy here is night and day. Number one pick in Irving, last pick in the draft in Thomas. Kind of pampered wunderkind in Irving, guy who's had to fight through every obstacle there is just to get to this point, and will have to keep fighting in Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas might not be better than Kyrie Irving. In fact, I know he's not better than Kyrie Irving, but he's so much more likable and easier to root for. And I hope that all year long when I'm rooting for the Celtics, I hope that it comes to a point where I'm looking in the box score come February and Isaiah Thomas is there and he's scoring 37 a game. I hope that's the case. Do I think it's likely? Probably not. But I hope he scores 35, 37, 44, and I hope he drops 50 on the Celtics at some point, because I want this guy who plays with his heart on his shoulder and is telling you how he feels. So often in sports media, we're like, man, that guy just doesn't say anything. Just all the cliches, all this, all that. We're on to Cincinnati. Isaiah Thomas's pain, his vulnerability, and his words are real. And because he's real and because he's letting you in, it makes me want to jump in there with him and jump in the fight with him. I don't know that the Celtics beat the Cavs or that the Cavs can beat the Celtics. I think that they're better if Thomas is healthy. I don't know that that happens. But I know that Isaiah Thomas is a guy that I'm going to be rooting for all year long to get back, get to All-NBA level, and to stick it to Danny Ainge in one way or the other. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and the 101.3 ESPN app. Thanks to Field Yates, who joined us in the huddle. Thanks to Justin Latta, who joined us in the huddle as well, getting you ready for the Yankees and Indians. Thanks to Stefania Bell, our new ESPN NFL insider and fantasy football expert, who will join us every Wednesday at 6:05 right here in Champlain Valley Game Night. So we are, remember, tomorrow, Buffalo Wild Wings in South Burlington, Shelburne Road, Thursday Night Football. Thanks to our friends at Labatt Blue for the Labatt tailgate party. So for intern Devin, for intern Jordan, for intern Julia, for Jason, who's been hanging around as well, we're getting ready to go play basketball. For Rich, for Arnie. Arnie, I hope you've got enough jump shots up, because I am coming for you, and it's not going to be pretty when we play one-on-one. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. It's 101.3 ESPN. Game 5, Yankees-Indians is next.